All right, so you know we've got this this case, right? A chicken farmer, his name's Price, and he's got this chicken house that, well, it's not quite living up to expectations. So he decides to sue the contractor who built it, Lotco. Makes sense, right?
Seems pretty straightforward at first.
Yeah, you'd think so, but then things get interesting because Lotco turns around and says, "Wait a minute, it's not our fault the chicken house is messed up. It's the nails. They were faulty." And they try to drag the nail manufacturer, ITW, into this whole legal battle.
Classic blame game.
Exactly. So now the question becomes, what happens when a defendant tries to bring in someone else they think is responsible? And that's what we're diving into today, this fascinating legal concept called third-party impleader.
It's a pretty common scenario, really. You see it all the time in construction cases, product liability cases. A defendant gets sued and they say, "Hold on, if I'm liable, then it's because of something this other party did." So they try to bring that other party in to share the responsibility or maybe even shift the blame entirely.
And for anyone listening who's, you know, interested in law or maybe even starting to navigate the legal world themselves, understanding how this works is crucial because it can get pretty complicated, right?
Absolutely. It really gives you insight into how these lawsuits can expand and how the courts deal with figuring out who's ultimately responsible for what. And Price v. CTB, Inc. is a perfect case study for that.
Yeah, it's like a textbook example of impleader in action. So in this deep dive, we're going to dissect this case, look at the key players and legal arguments, and really unpack these important concepts like derivative liability. You know, that idea that someone's on the hook only if someone else is found liable first, and then this whole concept of implied indemnity.
And to do that, let's start with the basics. Let's go back to the beginning. What exactly were Price's complaints? What did he allege that Latco did wrong in building this chicken house?
Oh, Price went all in. He didn't hold back. He threw the book at Lotco,
Absolutely. Multiple claims.
Multiple claims. Absolutely. First, he said, "Look, Lotco breached the contract. They didn't build the chicken house according to the agreement."
Pretty standard in a construction dispute.
Exactly. But then he went further and said, "It wasn't just a simple mistake. They were fraudulent. They misrepresented the quality of the materials they were using." And then on top of all that, he brought tort claims. He accused them of negligence, saying they didn't build the house with the level of care and skill that's required.
So not just you messed up the blueprint, but you were careless and reckless.
Precisely. And he even alleged wantonness, which suggests they showed a reckless disregard for the potential harm that could happen.
So Price is basically saying, this wasn't just a little oversight. You guys really dropped the ball, and I suffered because of it.
Exactly.
So how does Lyco respond to all of this? They're facing some pretty serious allegations here.
Well, they don't just sit back and take it. Instead, they decide to pull a legal maneuver. They say, "Okay, hold on. We're not solely responsible here. If we're liable, it's because the nail manufacturer, ITW." And they use Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 14A to bring ITW into the lawsuit as a third-party defendant.
Rule 14A, that's the rule that allows for impleader.
Exactly. So it's like, hey, if we're going down, we're taking you with us. And they presented a whole bunch of arguments against ITW. They said, "Look, these nails breached the warranty. They didn't meet the standards we were promised." Then they argued ITW violated Alabama's extended manufacturer's liability doctrine, which basically holds manufacturers responsible for defects that cause harm.
Right, because if the nails were defective and that caused the chicken house to fall apart.
Then the manufacturer should be liable, yeah.
Makes sense.
And then they threw in the common law concept of indemnity. That means if the faulty nails were the root of all these problems, then ITW should have to reimburse Latco for any losses they suffer.
So Latco is really trying to shift the blame here, saying, if we have to pay Price, it's only because of those defective nails from ITW. But, you know, it's not every day that you get pulled into a lawsuit about a chicken house,
Right.
especially if you're a nail manufacturer.
Especially if you're a nail manufacturer.
So how did ITW respond to all of this? Did they just roll over?
Oh, no, they did not roll over. They put up a fight. Their main argument was, look, Latco was misusing Rule 14A. Even if the nails were bad, that doesn't automatically mean Latco gets a free pass. They still had a responsibility to construct the chicken house properly. They were basically saying that the nail issue was separate from Price's overall complaints about the construction.
So they're arguing that the issues with the nails are a sideshow.
Exactly. And then they brought up another defense, Latches. They claim Latco took way too long to try to bring them into the lawsuit and that this delay hurt their ability to defend themselves.
So now we're getting into the nitty-gritty of civil procedure. For our listeners who are really trying to understand this, let's break down Rule 14A. What's the key principle behind it?
Okay, so Rule 14A, this is all about this idea of derivative liability. It means that a defendant like LATCO, in this case, can only bring in a third party, like ITW, if that third party's liability depends on the outcome of the original lawsuit.
Okay, so it's like a chain reaction.
Yes, exactly like a chain reaction.
Yeah.
The first domino has to fall before the second domino can fall. So LATCO can only go after ITW if LATCO is found liable to Price first.
It's not about ITW owing anything to Price directly at this point.
Right.
It's all about ITW potentially owing something to LATCO if LATCO loses that first round.
Right. So you see how this can get really complex and kind of twisty-turny. And ITW tried to argue that their nail issue was a completely separate thing. But the court didn't buy it. They said, no, there's a potential link here.
Right. Because if those nails were defective.
And that contributed to the chicken house problems.
And if LATCO is found liable for those problems.
Then ITW could be on the hook to indemnify LATCO, you know, to cover their losses.
Exactly. It's all about following that potential chain of responsibility.
Now, ITW also brought up this point that even if Rule 14A technically applied, Alabama law doesn't explicitly say anything about indemnity in this kind of situation. Like, there's no law that says nail manufacturers have to indemnify contractors in chicken house lawsuits. So how did the court deal with that?
This is where it gets interesting. You know, the court dug a little deeper and said, well, let's look at the concept of implied contractual indemnity in Alabama.
Implied. So it's not written down anywhere.
Exactly. The idea is that even though there might not be a specific contract between LATCO and ITW saying you have to indemnify us, the nature of their relationship and the circumstances of the case might create that obligation.
Okay, so help us break down this implied contractual indemnity in Alabama. What are the elements that have to be met for it to apply?
So according to the court, there are three main elements. First, LATCO has to be blameless. They can't be at fault for the damage to Price's chicken house.
So if it was really just bad workmanship by LATCO,
then no indemnity.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
What's the second element?
Second, ITW, the nail manufacturer. They have to be the ones responsible for the defective nails. So it's not enough just to say the nails were bad. You have to prove that the defect was due to something ITW, maybe a flaw in the design or manufacturing process.
And the third element.
Third, LATCO has to have actually paid out money to Price. So the indemnity claim against ITW only kicks in if LATCO is found liable and actually has to shell out some cash.
So it's not just a hypothetical liability. It has to be real dollars paid out.
Exactly. It's like, show me the money. And, you know, to determine all of this implied stuff, the court didn't just make it up as they went along. They actually looked at other cases where similar situations had come up.
Like they were looking for guidance from other courts.
Exactly. They specifically relied on a case from Illinois, Maxfield v. Simmons. In that case, the Illinois Supreme Court dealt with a situation where someone who sold a defective product tried to get indemnity from the manufacturer of that product. And even though an Illinois decision isn't technically binding on an Alabama court, the Alabama court found the reasoning in Maxfield really persuasive.
So they're like, well, if Illinois thinks about it this way, maybe we should too.
Precisely. And it shows how courts can use decisions from other states to help them interpret the law in their own state.
Okay, so the court is convinced that impleader is okay in this situation. They think there might be grounds for indemnity, even if it's implied. But what about that latches defense? ITW was pretty adamant that LATCO waited too long to bring them into this whole mess.
Yeah, latches is an interesting defense. It's not about a strict deadline. It's about fairness.
Fairness.
Yeah, it's saying that you can't just sit on your rights and then spring a lawsuit on someone when they're no longer in a good position to defend themselves.
Okay, so ITW's argument is that because LATCO waited so long, they couldn't properly investigate the nails or find witnesses, or maybe some key evidence is now gone.
Exactly. And they claimed this delay prejudiced their ability to fight the claims against them.
So what did the court have to say about that? Did they agree with ITW?
Well, ultimately, the court said no. And here's the important part. For a latches defense to succeed, it's not enough to just show that there was a delay. You have to show that you were actually harmed by the delay.
So ITW had to prove that they were actually worse off because LATCO waited.
Precisely. And in this case, they couldn't really do that. They couldn't point to any specific evidence that they had been prejudiced by the timing. The court even pointed out that LATCO had tried to serve ITW earlier but hadn't been successful. So the court wasn't convinced that LATCO was intentionally trying to drag things out.
So latches defense denied.
Denied.
So let's bring this all together for our listeners. What are the big takeaways from Price v. CTB, Inc.? What should they really remember?
I think this case really drives home a few key points. First, Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 14A is a really important tool for defendants. It lets them bring in other parties who might ultimately be responsible. So it's all about figuring out who should really be on the hook for the plaintiff's damages.
Right. It's all about shifting liability if appropriate.
Exactly. And the second takeaway is that federal rules and state laws, they often work hand in hand. We saw that in how the court analyzed Alabama's implied indemnity doctrine. So even when there's no specific statute that addresses a particular situation, courts can look to common law principles and case law from other states to figure things out.
So you really have to consider both the federal rules of civil procedure and the specific laws of the state where the case is being heard.
Absolutely. And the third point, the latches defense, it's not just about time. It's about whether the delay actually caused harm.
Right. You've got to prove that you were actually hurt by the other side waiting.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's important to remember that this case, this decision, wasn't about who was ultimately right or wrong. It was just about whether LATCO could bring ITW into the lawsuit.
Exactly. It was a procedural victory for LATCO.
Right. The main event, the trial where they decide whether the nails were really defective, whether LATCO is liable, that's still to come.
So there are still a lot of questions to be answered.
Exactly. But this case gives us a lot to think about, right? I mean, imagine you're a business or a manufacturer. How would you protect yourself in a situation like this? Would you make sure your contracts clearly spell out who's responsible for what? How would you address the possibility of being brought into someone else's lawsuit down the road?
It definitely highlights the importance of careful drafting, understanding the laws of the state where you're doing business, and being aware of potential liabilities.
Absolutely. And this is just one example of how complex civil litigation can get. But, you know, we encourage our listeners to take this as a jumping off point. Go read Rule 14. Look into the indemnity laws in your own state and really explore the nuances of these legal defenses. The more you understand, the better equipped you'll be to navigate the legal landscape.